Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome and thank you for listening to the latest episode of Borders Blatherings, the podcast where Mary Craig and I have a good old chat and talk about the curious, shadowy and often magical history of the Scottish borderlands.
Indeed, yes. And it's looking very shadowy today because I was walking here. There's a bit of mist along the river valleys.
And talking of walking, my idea for a little chat today came to me while I was walking with Cassie Dog this morning.
Okay.
She was off busy hunting down a rather elusive hare in the Quaiting Green, down from the house. And while she was doing that, while keeping an eye on her, I was whiling away the long minutes waiting for her to give up. 14 years old, but won't give up, you know, in the DNA. And I spent the time going through all of the different factions in the Conservative Party today.
Oh, okay.
This is how I spend my time.
Right, okay.
And it's by no means an exhaustive list, but I thought, well, we have the Popcons, the Popular Conservatives. We have the New Conservatives. We have the ERG. We have the NRG. We have the Common Sense group who presumably have their regular meetings in a telephone box. We have the One Nation Conservatives. We have all these lobby groups that masquerade as think tanks. We have the Free Marketeers. And we have the Three Musketeers in Lee Anderson, Liz Truss, and Suella Braverman, who appear to be fighting wokeism with a rapier-sharp intellect.
Absolutely.
And I kind of gave up at that point. So there are many, many factions. Were we working with the BBC at this point, I would have to show some balance.
Some balance, yes.
Well, the other major political parties in the UK are also suffering from some schism in terms of, shall we say, Israel-Gaza and the green agenda and, you know, their attitude to that. But back to the Conservatives.
Okay.
That thought process while Cassie was off chasing the hare reminded me of a recent article I came across where a senior Conservative by the name of Conor Burns, who I think is a sir, down in Bournemouth somewhere, had released, he posted a video on social media where he was talking about the plans to set up a permanent traveller site in his constituency.
Oh, I can just imagine.
Do you remember
that?
It was a few weeks back.
I remember.
And he, in the video, he talks about, we cannot possibly have this so-called settled traveller community in the middle of this residential area. And of course, that got me thinking. So I looked at some of the responses that managed to generate. And I'll give you a quote from the chair of the Traveller Movement, who said, "The content of the video spoke of Romani gypsies and Irish travellers as if they were second-class citizens." What it implies is that people from our community shouldn't be alongside people from other ethnicities. In other words, that we should be living completely separately, out of sight, out of mind. And that took me right back to a two-part podcast we did some time ago, where we focused on the Gypsy Kings and Queens of Scotland. And we talked about the wonderful contribution they had made. We talked about the origins. We even came up with the great fact that ex US President Bill Clinton's roots are from the Jeffers.
Yes,
that particular
the Fab Lies. Yes.
And so we that got me thinking, okay, we focused on the 17th century. We focused on the discrimination against the Romani people. We focused on the fact they had to fight a hostile environment and so on, also in that podcast. So here's a question for you. Were there events, because I talked about factions in the Tory party at the beginning, we tended to focus on the Romani people as a group who were subject to all sorts of discrimination and so on. But were there any important events in this part of the world where that group itself was riven by division? And I think you mentioned a few weeks ago that a listener had requested that we focus on something.
Yes.
It might be in this envelope, I'm not sure.
It was the gypsy battle that took place at Romano in the borders, which is curious. I mean, do you remember at the end of, I think it was the second episode we did about the gypsy travellers, and we talked about the fact that they had a motto, "Let war never be between us."
Yes,
and they didn't
yes.
fight themselves. And now, of course, after having said that, they've now just contradicted me by showing that, yes, they absolutely did fight with each other. So it's an interesting concept. I mean, gypsies, Roma, travellers, Scots, Irish, English, Dutch, we're all Jock Thompson's bairns. We really are.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, to think of the Roma people as these wonderful, beautiful people who never fought with each other.
Yeah.
Is equally a racial stereotype as them being thieves or whatever. You know, folk are folk. And yes, we're back in the 17th century where
we
can have
a
good old blether today about a battle between the gypsies that took place in the borders at Romano.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Is this territorial? Is it clannish? Is it to do with protectionism? Is it different countries involved? Or
They're all Scots. Uh-huh. But we have two groupings. So we have the Fas, and we've met them before, the Fab Lies.
Oh, yeah.
And we have the Shaws. And they intermarried because we have one chap called Robert Shaw, and he is married to Isabella, I think her first name is, and she's a Fa.
She's a Fa.
So the Fas and the Shaws are interlinked. Mm-hmm. And then we have another faction, the Baileys and the Browns. And they're intermarried. And they don't really get on, these two factions. The Fas and the Shaws tend to be on the Scottish side of the border, and the Baileys and the Browns tend to be on the English side of the border.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah.
but they travel over that border. We've talked so many times about how the border is so porous.
It's amazing how that leaks in, that border.
The border just goes. So we're in 1677, and the Fars and the Shaws are up at Haddington, up in East Lothian.
Yeah.
And they're working up there, and they're working the Haddington Fair. Now, the Haddington Fair was a big fair.
That would be big, yeah.
It was a big fair. So they're buying, they're selling, they're telling fortunes, they're doing some music. They might have been doing a little bit of thieving, I could possibly comment. But they come away from this, and they know that they've heard about the Baileys and the Browns coming back over the border and stumping all over there. So there's going to be a punch-up.
Yeah.
There's going to be a punch-up between the Fars and the Shaws on one side and the Baileys and the Browns on the other. Now, Haddington Fair, as I say, was a big fair, and Roma were not exactly welcome there. So they've done whatever they've done at the fair, selling, buying, thieving, whatever, and they haven't sort of divvied up what they've got. They've just left as quickly as possible, got themselves down to the borders, and then they'll look at who's got what and who's getting what where and all the rest of it. The trouble is that they did very, very well at that Haddington Fair. There was a lot of loot to be divvied up, and there was a lot of drink taken. And then an argument ensued. And the argument got worse, and some more drink was taken, and then the argument got worse again, and then the argument ends up in a huge fight. So the battle that we're talking about is not between the Fars and the Shaws and the Baileys and the Browns, it's between the Fars and the Shaws. They're fighting each other. And that's the start of our story. And it became known in the local area as the Field of Gypsy Blood, or the site of the Great Battle, and all these sorts of things.
And this is in the People's area, in the Wilderness.
Peoplesshire. As I say, 1677, it's October. So as I say, it's been the big fair. And I think about 30 of them end up getting arrested. It's a full-on brawl.
Oh, it's a brawl.
But all the rest of it. And Robert Shaw, who was the head of the Shaw family, he's known as Robin. He and his sons end up murdering, Sandy Farr, who's known as a great fellow. Sandy Farr is murdered, his wife is murdered, and his brother George is very seriously wounded. The guards appear and arrest anybody and everybody. I mean, the list of names of those arrested is about 20 or 30 names, and they're all chucked in the people's toll booth. And that is the great battle. So as I say, we've got two deaths and one critically wounded. I'm not sure if George survived. I think he might have died later on of his wounds as well.
Sandy's brother.
Three Fars are dead, and all the Shaws are in prison in Peebles Tolbooth. And I don't know why. This is one thing I haven't been able to find out for definite. They aren't tried in Peebles. They're sent up to Edinburgh for trial. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was because the people's authorities didn't want a trial. Because we're at the stage now where people, the sort of tolerance that had been in the previous centuries had gone. There was a huge amount of discrimination against Roma peoples at that point. So I don't know if peoples are saying, we don't even want dirty gypsies in our area, we don't want them here, we don't want a trial with them, get rid of them, get lost sort of type thing. I'm not sure.
But by sending them to Edinburgh, surely you would have the legal buds there who could expedite the because they were, the Romani people were, if I'm not wrong, they were still subject to some discriminatory laws.
Oh, absolutely,
the chances
yes.
of a fair trial.
Absolutely, yes.
I would have thought were fairly low.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure exactly what happened. So as I say, eventually it's Robin Shaw and three of his sons are sent to trial. All the other Shaws are released without charge about the murder, but they are all fined for having been fighting.
Yeah,
they're more or less told to get out of Peebles. They're chucked out. We're not quite sure where they go. They certainly are known in the local area for several years thereafter. There's no gypsy community in that area for quite a few years afterwards. The Baileys and the Browns, they never materialised, they never appeared, so we're not quite sure what happened with them. They probably just went back down over the border and kept their mouths shut.
They've essentially been interlopers into the land.
Yeah.
And this
battle
hand.
That was going to happen with them just never happened.
Never happened.
So the Shaws are sent up to Edinburgh, they're put into the Edinburgh toll booth, and then they're brought for trial, and they're all found guilty. And they're hanged. And then the four bodies are buried in one communal grave in Greyfriars.
But in Greyfriars, yeah.
They're in Greyfriars, which is interesting because Greyfriars was a relatively new church at that point.
Ah, right.
And I'm surprised that they were buried there. I'm surprised they were buried anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that they were buried in that new kirkyard.
That would have been, I would have thought that would have been for the great and the good.
Well, yes, which I find it very surprising. But then, of course, remember, you've got the Covenanters prison up there.
Yeah.
So they're probably just chucked up beside that.
There's a bit of symbolism going on.
If you like, that's sort of the first part of the story that we can pick apart before we move to a secondary part of the story, which is equally as curious. But let's pick apart this first bit and see what we think is going on here. I mean, why would this be called a battle when it's a fight?
It's a fight within a cohesive group.
Yes. And I find it interesting that, you know, it becomes known as the Field of Gypsy Blood, and it's almost as if people are reveling in it and saying, oh, look, this is what they're like, this is what they're like. They fight and they murder each other, and aren't they awful, and aren't they terrible? And it becomes a story very quickly.
Yeah, but if this event were to happen today, I'm quite sure the Daily Mail would be happy to go with the headline, Field of Gypsy Blood, because that job done.
Yeah.
You know, point the finger at these guys. You know?
Absolutely, And the fact that Peebles didn't want the trial anywhere near them, they're saying, no, get them out of our territory. We don't want them. We don't want the stigma of people looking at Peebles and saying, oh, well, that's where the gypsies are, and they fight and they murder each other, you know.
So in essence, from what you've said, this is a falling out between two groups over the relatively rich pickings they've made at the fair in Haddington.
I think so. I think
and divvying up the spoils, in a sense.
They've done really, really well at the fair. They've come down, they've come away from Haddington as quickly as possible so that they're not, you know, under the sort of eyes of the authorities up in Haddington who might not want them there. They've decided to sit down and get a bit drunk, you know, to celebrate, divvy up the spoils. And, of course, remember, they're all hyped up because they're heading for a battle with the Baileys and the Browns. Everybody knew that this big battle was happening. So they're already psyched up psychologically for a fight, and then it dissolves into a fight between the groups. And, of course, because they are related, I mean, we've all done it. We've all sat around the Christmas table, and before long you're throwing Brussels sprouts at each other because it's your family member that has annoyed you.
Yeah.
If you stick alcohol in the mix and you stick some large amounts of money into the mix and the fact that everybody at that time carried knives in the mix, you can see where a couple of the lads squabbling can develop into a full-blown fight with everybody kicking and punching. I don't think the Shaws set out to murder the Fars. I think there was just a fight that got out of hand.
It seems like an entirely human thing. You know, we're all immigrants. We're all humans.
Yes.
And we're all Jock Tamson sperms.
Exactly.
So that happens.
I mean, you can go to any city in Britain on a Saturday night and watch two lads that are best friends get so drunk they're fighting each other in the street.
Absolutely.
Over nothing. Over something ridiculous like a football score or somebody's looked at somebody else's girlfriend or something.
You mentioned that thing. It fascinating for me when students from Germany would come and live with me doing an intensive teaching program. I would often take them out for a beer in Edinburgh. And some of them would often say, Doug, these two people at the bar who are fighting with each other, what are they fighting about? And I was, they're best friends.
Yes.
They are showing their affection to each other, which always went down, huh?
Because you're much more likely to fight with a friend than somebody you don't know because there's an intensity of emotion there.
Exactly.
If a stranger says something that you don't like in the street, you can ignore them and walk away because they're a stranger and you'll never see them again. But if your best mate tells you that he thinks your football team's rotten, that's going to rankle with you.
So
if you then take that back to the 17th century, because remember, of course, the Roman population at that time lived from fair to fair. They don't have fixed jobs. They are discriminated against
they're
the whole time.
From so much.
So there's all of these pressures on, psychological pressures on them that isn't on the ordinary or native Scottish population, if you want to call it. So they're discriminated against. They know they're not probably really supposed to be in Haddington Fair because you had to have a license to go to the fair to trade. So they've not really got a trading license.
Mm.
They know that they'll get chased out of town if people realise what they're up to. There's all of those pressures. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of argument with the Bailey Brown set going on, and they're hyped up for that fight. Put alcohol into that situation. As I say, I can absolutely understand why a fight could... I can actually see two of the lads starting the fight, and Sandy Shaw's wife, who was pregnant when she was killed, I can see her running between two guys and shouting something like, "Stop fighting, he's not worth it."
Grow up,
and she
lads.
Gets stabbed by accident.
Yep, yep.
You can see how that would happen.
Mm-hmm. So if I can use some simplistic imagery, you've got the two groups, the Shaws and the Fast. They're the cats who've got the cream.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to divvy up the rich spoils that they've got. But while they've been up at the fair, while the cat's away, the mice have been playing. These other two groups have moved into the territory. So the Faz and the Shaws are planning together to deal with the problem of the...
Yes, they're coming down after the fair
to sort
out the Baileys and the Browns, who seem to be an interrelated group.
So they're united in that goal.
Yes.
And then it all kicks off because of the alcohol, the beer.
Yeah,
I can get that.
I mean, in the list of names of the Shaws who are arrested, there are a lot of female names in there. You know, this isn't just a group of lads.
Right.
This has been women that have been going up. They've been doing palm reading. They've been doing their tarot. They've been dancing and singing.
Mm-hmm.
They've maybe been selling some of the craft work they've made. They would have been trading. There would have been some horse trading going on with the men. You know, so this has been it's a busy time of year because it's October.
Yeah.
It's a busy time of year before the winter sets in.
And winter's coming. Yeah.
So you want to make as much money as you can out of these autumn fairs because that's when everybody's got a bit of money. In the spring, it's the start of the rural season. And in the summer, it's busy. But in the autumn, that's when people have got money. That's when the crops are brought in or the livestock is slaughtered. That's when you're going to make your money for over the year. You're going to make as much money as possible. Then you're going to go back down home, sort out the Baileys and the Browns, give them a slap, and then you can bed in for the winter. That's what's going on. But you know that you've got to do that under the eyes of the authorities.
Yeah.
So you've got to keep below the radar to bring in a modern phrase. You know, you've got to watch that you're not raising suspicion and you're not being seen by the authorities who don't like you. So you've got all of these pressures put together, and as I say, add alcohol into the mix, and a fight ensues.
But they have made it together back from Addington Fair down to Peebleshire without this kicking off.
Yes,
in a sense.
Yeah, I think that's because I think they hadn't divvied up the loot. They had just left the fair. Thought, right, let's get back down to our own land. Let's go home
quickly,
and we'll sort things out. Because if you stop at Addington, you might be seen by the authorities up there, who are going to start questioning why you were at the fair, questioning what you were doing at the fair. You might get arrested.
Yeah.
They may or may not have been stealing some stuff, but even if they hadn't been, because of the way the laws were going through, it would be assumed that they had been up to something illegal.
Yeah.
It would be assumed that the horses they had didn't belong to them or whatever they had. So they'd want to leave as quickly as possible.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-travelling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favoured children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
You mentioned some numbers, but are the deaths on... with one family, the Shaws, and the arrests are all the other family.
The other Faz. Way, the Faz are the ones who die. So it's Sandy Faz dies, his wife dies, and George Faz is seriously wounded. Now, initially, everybody gets arrested. Everybody that can be found is arrested. The Faz are then released, so it's all the Shaws that are under arrest.
Right.
There's about 20 Shaws arrested and in Peebles Tolbooth. And then once they've sorted it out, it's Robin Shaw and his three sons are sent up to Edinburgh.
And four of them are sent to Edinburgh and they are eventually...
And they're put on trial. They're put on trial for murder. They're found guilty and they're hanged. And then, as I say, they're buried in Greyfriars.
What would have been the chances of a fair trial? I know that's a difficult question.
Very, very little. Very little chance of a fair trial.
I would have thought so, yeah.
they were subject to the fact that they were gypsies, they were discriminated against, they had committed a murder. I mean, two people had died, one person had been grievously wounded. Trying to say, and maybe in modern terms you might say, well, it was a fight and it was self-defence and I didn't mean to kill them, so that would be, I presume, manslaughter or self-defence or something. There's no chance. Could they even afford a defence advocate? Because if you can't afford one, it's not like today, if you can't afford a defence barrister, one will be provided for you. Well, if you can't afford one, tough tatties, you don't get one. And again, although Scots law does work under the innocent till proven guilty, the problem is the very fact that you are a Roma means that you are instantly guilty. You're not going into that court as an innocent person. Today, if you're arrested for murder today, the assumption under the law is that you're innocent till proven guilty. And then when you are in the trial, the defence doesn't have to prove anything. It's all on the prosecution. The procurator fiscal has to prove you did what you're being accused of doing. In the 17th century as a Roma, you're walking into that court, you're already a guilty person, and you have to prove your innocence. And as I say, you might not have any form of advocate or barrister there to speak on your behalf.
And I presume, I could be wrong, but in the court documents, for example, they would have been known, not as human beings, but as vagabonds.
They're listed as vagabonds and Egyptians.
Egyptians.
Vagabond Egyptians. I mean, the youngest of them was probably only about 16 years of age. It was very unclear as to who had actually done the stabbing. It was just, you know, I mean, what's interesting is that Sandy Farr is described as a proper fellow. And I'm thinking, that's a really odd term to use. But what I think the court was trying to do was it was trying to distinguish, because if you're saying, it's one lot of gypsies fighting another lot of gypsies, everybody's going to go, oh, well, so what? Whereas, you know, the victim is a proper fellow. The victim wasn't quite that bad a gypsy. He was sort of okay, you know, so there's a lot of that going on.
And I suppose maybe I'm obsessed now by the right wing propaganda media that exists in this country, but it's very convenient that his wife is pregnant.
You know,
this has to be germane to the story.
Exactly. Now, she may or may not have been, I'm presuming she was, but she might not have been, but you're going to ladle that on as much as you can,
aren't
you?
Exactly that. Whether or not she was.
You know, that's going to be ladled on. But what I'd actually like to bring up is the second part of the story where we...
you mentioned some interesting or mystical part of this.
Well, here we go.
Now I'm all ears. What the heck was that?
So, they are all hanged. Now, the youngest boy, who was either called Thomas or Alexander, I can't quite work out from the papers, but the youngest boy was the first one to be... Sorry, he was the last one hanged and the first one cut down. And that may or may not be relevant. Okay. So
hold on.
Right, there are four of them being hanged.
So he's first hanged.
He was the last one hanged. Sorry. So his father is hanged first. So Robin Shaw is hanged first, right? Then the two older boys, and then the youngest boy, who's about 16, he's the last one to be hanged.
But they cut him down first.
And they cut him down first. Mm-hmm. Probably because if you think of them in a row.
I'm thinking.
So you've got to the last ones hanged, and then you have to, so you go downstairs, they're all hanged. You have to climb back up the stairs with the rope to cut them down. He's the first one you get to.
It's a logistics exercise. Right?
Last hanged, first cut down.
Right.
Taken off to Greyfriars, the four of them chucked in the grave.
Would these have been marked graves or just
probably not
interred? No. Yeah, yeah.
So they're chucked in a communal grave,
yeah.
All four of the bodies. Mm-hmm. The next morning, it is discovered that the grave has been disturbed and the youngest boy's body is missing.
Well, that's the resurrectionists, the gravediggers, Edinburgh, famous for it.
Did he come to? Was he not quite dead? Did he manage to crawl out the grave?
They hanged him. And they buried him alive.
Well.
And he crawled out of the grave.
And the thing is that if you're hanged for something, sentence has been carried out. You can't be hanged a second time. Under Scots law, if you're hanged, sentence has been carried out.
Yeah.
The fact that the hangman botched the job and you're still walking about, the law can't touch you.
Ah.
So did he sort of come to in the night? scrabble his way out of the grave? I'm not sure, because you see...
Yeah, being Romany, they're not going to get one of these grandiose caged-in graves or any of that.
Oh, no, there's a hole in the ground.
It's a hole in the ground.
There's literally a hole in the ground, and he probably got chucked in last.
Yeah.
Because, again, logistics, if he's the first one pulled down, he's the first one on the cart, mm-hmm. the other three bodies are piled on top of him, by the time you get to the grave, he's the last one on the grave.
Yeah.
Now, Greyfriars Kirkyard, for anybody that doesn't know, it has got a very high wall around it.
Yeah.
It lies behind the church, and the church have gates. Mm-hmm. Now, those church gates were closed over at night, and there was a night watchman.
Yeah.
The night watchman did not say that a body went past him. He did not say that that young lad got out of the grave and ran past him. Nor did he say that he saw him and thought it was a ghost. And Edinburgh's awash with ghost stories, so how this one hasn't become a ghost story, I don't know.
Maybe Bobby done it.
Greyfriars Bobby, well, you never know. So I don't know. So if this lad has come to, how did he get through those locked gates and past the night watchman who would have seen him? Or was it a resurrectionist? Did somebody sneaky past the watchman by maybe giving him a couple of coins and saying, just look the other way while I go and dig up one of those gypsies and I can sell that body up to the surgeons at the university?
Were there... That's a good point. In those days, late 17th century, were there... verbal or written deals with the medical school in Edinburgh where they got their hands on bodies for dissection?
There was no written agreement, but there was a verbal agreement that they might be given the bodies of criminals.
And there was a trade in that.
There was a trade in that. Yeah. Now, this is before Birkenhead. We're 150 years before Birkenhead. Although we might investigate Birkenhead later on.
I'm beginning to think we couldn't actually think about doing that.
But yes, I mean, there were people who... Because obviously, I mean, surgery is very, very intricate. And the only way to do it is to practice by slicing up a body. Uh-huh. And therefore, you need bodies. Now, very few people are going to donate their own body.
Mm-hmm.
It's against the law to disturb a grave. You can get some criminal bodies, but not many. But these four gypsies have been, you know, they've been taken down, they've been taken along and chucked in. But I think there's a reasonable chance that they might have taken this body because remember, he's a young boy of 16.
Yeah.
Most of the people they're going to get who are criminals are people who are, how can I put this politely, they're maybe alcoholic. Mm-hmm. They're maybe destitute. Their bodies are going to be not aged. In good condition. Yes. Whereas if they get a hold of a 16-year-old lad's body, that might be a really interesting. And as I say, I can't think of another way for that body to get past that night watchman unless he's been given a couple of coins to look the other way. Because if he sees the boy climbing out the grave, he might think it's a ghost. Well, I mean, if that was me, I'd be telling that story around every tavern and getting everybody to buy me drinks.
Drink out on that one for a long time.
And as I say, Edinburgh is awash with ghost stories. Yeah. We would know that one. It would be one of the ones that they did in the tours today at Greyfriars.
Yes.
And I mean, the young lad's not got anything to give the night watchman to keep his mouth shut.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I have done Greyfriars tours or ghost tours with various students over the years. And I've been in the Covenanters prison and so on. But in Greyfriars, I've never come across that story.
No,
at all.
No. So you'd think that story would be told. So that's what makes me think it's the resurrectionist that has gone in there, realised there's four bodies. I won't be able to get all four, but if I get one of them.
Yeah. We'll take the
16-year-old. Maybe it was just the fact that his was the body on top of the grave, so you just take one because obviously, you know, you've got to transport this, this body, you know, let's, you know, and a 16-year-old's maybe easier to carry than a grown man. I don't know.
I've never been in the corpse trade myself, but you would think that a 16-year-old might get a wee bit more for that.
Yeah. They might
a
get
lot
a little
more
bit
useful
more.
To the medical profession than
so
a wizened old man.
The chances are he's going to be at the top of the grave, so that makes him easy to get a hold of. He's 16, so his body is in better condition than, say, a 40-year-old. And if he's 16, he's probably lighter to carry. So you can nip in, give a couple of coins to the night watchman and nip out again, And then the night watchman can just say, oh, I don't know what happened. Oh, dear me. Because it's not as if the lad could have clambered out the grave and then got away without the night watchman seeing him, because the wall there is so high.
The gates would have been locked.
The gates would have been locked. Yeah. He can't get through the gates. He can't climb over the wall. The wall's huge.
Yeah.
You know, and over and above the fact that he has actually been hanged and then buried and come to, so he's not exactly going to be feeling fit. Yeah. You know, I mean, I do realise there were some people who did survive a hanging.
Well, to all Edinburgh tour guides, that's a great story, in the making.
Because the thing is that if he was alive, the law couldn't touch him.
Mm.
The Shaws could, though. Or, sorry, the Faz could.
The Faz, the revenge.
Because the Faz could turn around and say, oh, wait a wee minute here. So where's he going to go? This 16-year-old Roma boy is now on his own in Edinburgh, right? If he goes back to the Shaw family, they're going to have problems because they're related to the Faz. So there's a whole feud has now been kicked off between those two families. Yeah. He can't pitch back up. He can't go to the Baileys and the Browns because they don't like him. You know, where's he going to go? He's a 16-year-old boy on his own. He's a 16-year-old gypsy boy on his own in Edinburgh at night after being hanged.
That's more than adding insult to injury,
So as I say, he's on a sticky wicket. So I think it's more likely that his body was stolen by resurrectionists, although this is, as I say, 150 years before Burke and Hare and what they got up to.
Yeah, but... I used to drink in a pub called The Diggers in that part of Edinburgh, grave diggers, resurrectionist grave diggers.
Mm-hmm.
I have a thought. This story may have more meat to it. Oh, God, that's a useless choice of words. But the idea of the grave diggers, resurrectionists, call them what you will.
Mm.
Were they... I'm looking for a second part of this podcast
now.
I see. Were they... Did they operate in this part of the world, down here in the Borders?
Well, Burke and Hare obviously are the two famous chaps who actually didn't dig as many graves as they bumped people off.
Well, that's the Hollywood story. I'm thinking more of local history.
But yes, there are stories of their effects and coming down into the Borders. So perhaps taking our young Alexander or Thomas Shaw story a little bit further.
Could let's revisit
this and see if we can dig a little more into this story and find out if his body was resurrected.
Because what we've just recorded, Mary, you've only managed to mention the church once. and I'd be more interested in delving into this a little bit more.
Yeah.
And to see how
let's do that.
What the environment was. Yes. You know, we've talked hostile, we've talked discrimination and racism and so on, but let's delve a little bit deeper into that story.
Indeed. Let's try
that. Based on the young fella who survived.
Who survived.
Yeah.
Yes.
So shall we meet again and maybe think about padding that out?
I think so. Let's explore the resurrectionists and what they may or may not have got up to in the Scottish Borders.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very much, Mary.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.